It's the Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA, our weekly exploration of some of the top news stories. I'm Kevin Gavin. The race for the U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania heats up. Community leaders release a new plan to better integrate immigrants in the region. But first, several developments about moving about town. The fire-damaged Liberty Bridge remains closed. Port Authority operators and service personnel reject a tentative contract. Bike advocates call on PennDOT to include safe biking lanes in their design plans. And Uber's self-driving cars hit the streets of Pittsburgh. We're going to talk about all these aspects helping, hindering Pittsburghers getting around town with Ryan Dito, reporter with Pittsburgh City Paper. Ryan, welcome.
Oh, welcome. I mean, thank you.
Also with us is Mike Walton, reporter for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Welcome to you as well, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, you can join the conversation by tweeting your comments or your questions for these guys at WESA Confluence. The Liberty Bridge has been closed to traffic since Friday, September 2nd, due to a fire. And we received the bad news this morning from PennDOT District Executive Dan Cessna that the bridge will not be reopening Monday as had been planned because they're adding an external bracing system for redundancy.
The lateral jacks now will be associated with a heat straightening process that is more time consuming than our original plan where we thought we would actually cut this damaged member.
So what is being done to repair the bridge? When might it reopen? Mike Walton, you covered that announcement for the Trib. What did you take away from it?
Well, the announcement today came after PennDOT had a couple different times backed up their scheduled reopening date. They said this morning that they're looking at a timeline of weeks now. They said it won't be months, but beyond that, they didn't really want to offer any specifics. They said they don't want to get, you know, commuters' hopes up to only then have to change their plans. And they also stressed that this new delay is a result of safety concerns and making sure that they get this project done right and that they do it in the safest and best way possible.
But the understanding is that all the parts, did they arrive on schedule this week?
My understanding is that they are waiting on some of the additional safety parts, which the clip mentioned, the bracing parts. Last night, PennDOT officials said that those hadn't arrived yet. This morning, I think they were still waiting on them. So it kind of waits, you know, we kind of wait and see what happens with those.
Well, this, you know, we're talking about 55,000 motorists a day. But, Ryan, this affects everybody, no matter what sort of transportation you take to get about town.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's one of the probably more used bridges in the whole county in terms of getting people from the South Hills into Pittsburgh. But I know Port Authority has added additional rail cars on their T lines to which go to, you know, go through the South Hills on the red and the blue line, and to try to, I guess, accommodate the people commuting into Pittsburgh.
So the question is, when a major incident occurs that truly impacts so many people, do we have plans in place to help people get around sort of those emergency plans? Have we found that out?
Yeah. Mike. You know, I think that PennDOT, you know, they put detours into place and they suggest drivers follow them right now. You know, the Fort Pitt tunnel and bridge have been a popular detour, and I've heard from motorists that traffic has been pretty bad on that route since this happened. Interestingly, though, there is a group of two professors, one from CMU, one from Pitt, who are actually working on a new transportation detour modeling system, and they're using the Liberty Bridge closure to kind of collect data to plug into that system as they build it. And they hope that that system will help PennDOT put in more effective detours that can really make these kinds of things as easy as possible for people.
And Brian, how important is it to sort of not just PennDOT, but how they might take into consideration other forms of transportation, the impact?
Well, one of the problems with Pittsburgh is that when something goes wrong at one source, because of geography, because of the rivers, because of the hills, it really does, like, just make traffic can be terrible at certain intersections, right? But I think it is really important to kind of build up a lot of those alternative forms of transportation in terms of biking, in terms of walking, in terms of, we're actually one of the most walked cities in the whole country. I think we're something like 11% or something like that. People walk. That's extremely high, you know, considering we're not a San Francisco, you know, or a New York or anything like that. So to like build up those other aspects, you know, of commuting is a really important thing for Pittsburghers, but I don't know how much we're actually doing yet.
Right. I just want to ask you anecdotally, have you heard anything during the last couple of weeks? Because you are a bicyclist, you get around on your bike. Have you heard anything anecdotally about more people hopping on bikes to get around during these 2 weeks?
I haven't heard of anything like that. I don't know how many people are actually commuting from the South Hills via bike because there really isn't a connection right now.
There isn't, but I've noticed the backups, even here on the south side, on some of the side streets, have just been immense, and it's been impacting other roadways. And I was just wondering if you were hearing anything that way.
No, you know, I haven't heard anything that, but I do know that there is an actual pretty significant bike commuting population that do come from usually the south side that cross the Smithfield Street Bridge. I learned at a meeting, I guess, a few months ago that they get like 1,000 or over 1,000 a day that cross that bridge. They did a count on that. So I do think that population is growing. I don't know if it's quite because of the Liberty Bridge, but I could see that happening in the future. Absolutely.
Mike Walton, you did a story, it was in today's Trib, about the fines, and I think your total was somewhere around $3.5 million for the contractor, Joseph B. Fay. Are we looking at now a much higher if the delay is now more weeks?
Well, I think it's hard to say with any certainty at this point. The $3.5 million fine figure, which you referenced, that was calculated based on a 16-and-a-half-day closure, which is what the closure would have been if the bridge had opened on Monday, as PennDOT hoped. Now, with the timeline up in the air, we don't really know. And beyond fines for the bridge being closed and one of the associated ramps to Boulevard of the Allies being closed, PennDOT said this morning that the contractor is also on the hook for repair costs, and that includes the cost of bringing in experts to work on this project. And again, there's just no way of knowing at this point what the final dollar amount will be on all that.
Obviously, you can say each day that it's closed, there's a fine of this much, and then you can do the math to sort of figure that out. I was wondering, is there any component of just the inconvenience, the mess caused by all this? Is there a fine component for that?
I don't think that there's any specific fine component. I know that the fines that the contractor faces now are written into their agreement with PennDOT for this project. Beyond that, I think it can be kind of difficult to calculate the cost of the inconvenience and the cost of, you know, wastes, fuel for people sitting in traffic. But there certainly is a cost for people along those lines, and it's something that drivers have been dealing with all summer in Pittsburgh. There's been a lot of road work, and I've heard from a lot of people that are just aggravated and frustrated. And, you know, they say they try to avoid driving if they can, and they just try to make it as easy on themselves as possible. But it's still difficult with all the road work we've seen.
One more on the Liberty Bridge before we move on to other aspects of transportation being impacted around the area this week. And that is, do we know yet this delay in reopening the bridge because of the repairs needed to taken care of because of the fire? What about the overall project? That do we know yet if there might be delays there?
There was some brief discussion about that at the event this morning. PennDOT said that once the repairs are complete, they are going to work with the contractor to push the overall rehab project ahead. That's an $80 million project, which is supposed to run through the construction season of 2017. But we don't have any, there's no certain timeline about how this might affect, that bigger improvement effort.
Mike Walton's a reporter for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. We're also joined by Ryan Dito, reporter with Pittsburgh City Paper. And we're going to talk about Uber in just a minute, but I want to get a quick update. Earlier this week, we found out that the Port Authority drivers, operators, and service personnel turned down a tentative contract agreement. What do we know? Do we know much beyond that?
I haven't heard anything yet. And, you know, sometimes Port Authority, when they have these tense situations, can kind of, you know, lock up a little bit. That kind of happened with the during the Bruce Kelly investigation, that they were kind of hesitant to issue any comment until they kind of let the DA, you know,
right.
do its investigation. So sometimes during these tense things, they kind of lock up. So I haven't heard anything.
When the union, Local 85, announced that they had turned down the tentative contract, they said that they had welcomed the Port Authority negotiators back to the table, and they asked for a fact finder from the Pennsylvania Labor Relations Board. But we haven't heard anything about new talks?
No, other than both sides indicating that they want to, you know, continue working on this. Before the union vote, this proposal was billed by both parties as a proposal that would help preserve jobs and also preserve the light rail and bus service that Pittsburghers are relying to get around. Since then, we haven't really heard much more. I think both sides are, they've essentially declined comment on any details of negotiations or the proposal, and I think we're just going to have to kind of wait and see where the negotiations go.
Of course, the current contract expired June 30th. They're still working under terms of that, and that four-year contract included a two-year wage freeze. So let's move on to, we'll call it an event this week, and it gained international media attention, Uber's self-driving cars hitting the streets of Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh has the ideal conditions for us to be doing this type of work. Pittsburgh's an old city. It has an organic road network. It has real traffic conditions. We experience extreme weather here.
That's Rafi Krikorian, director of Uber's Advanced Technology Center in the Strip District. Earlier this week, several reporters were invited for ride-alongs. In fact, the mayor went for a ride-along as well. I heard some comments from reporters that the Uber vehicles were very cautious, not switching lanes to go around a temporarily stopped vehicle. Mike Walton and Ryan Dito, you had colleagues who did the ride-alongs. What sort of experiences did you hear from them?
Well, Kim Lyons did the ride-along for us and wrote about it on our blog, on our website. And she was saying that it was cool. You know, that's like one of the first things she wanted to say is like it was very cool, but it was a little creepy too, she said. In terms of letting this car driver, I think she's from Massachusetts, where they have some of the most aggressive drivers in the country. And so she was a little bit turned off by it. But in terms of the caution, she definitely really emphasized that in terms of it driving really close to the yellow line, too, which is, I guess, is a more of a very cautious thing. But that almost kind of freaked other people out, and maybe, you know, drive closer to the curb. And it didn't go around a car when she was,
a
stopped car that had emergencies on. And also when she was in there, she was actually sitting in the driver's seat, letting it do its automation. She was at a four-way stop. She turned right, and a car that was directly coming past her, not in her route, came close to her, and the car stopped because it got too close, even though it wasn't ever going to be in its route. So I think there's still a lot of kinks that, you know, Uber is probably plenty to work out.
We must note that in these ride-alongs, there were two Uber employees known as safety drivers. What were you hearing, Mike, from your colleague Aaron, who took the ride-along?
Yeah, Aaron Opperly took the ride-along for us. He's been covering Uber in Pittsburgh for a couple years now, and he said a lot of the same things that Ryan heard from Kim, and that is that it was a really novel experience. I mean, I think that people who got to do this are really taking part in what's really, I think, going to change the way that people, get around their communities. So I think it was really interesting and neat in that sense. Aaron also talked about the car's very cautious approach to driving, which makes sense. And I think, you know, Aaron, in this case, he was sitting in the front seat, and he said it was kind of interesting because I believe the wheel of the Ford Fusion is moving while this is all going on, but you're not touching it. And he just said it was novel and it was interesting. And I think also maybe, a little bit unsettling at times, too. You can imagine how strange that would be.
Ryan mentioned some kinks that might have to be worked out, and maybe one of those kinks, do we know if they have the technology? Because WESA reporter Liz Reed noted that it did not make a right on red, even though that intersection allowed for a right on red. So we heard from Uber what they still want to do through this testing and what they hope to accomplish.
I can't say with any certainty. I haven't really been following the story for us. I think that they probably, I think Uber probably has a lot of things they want to do.
Well, Uber in terms of hearing from Uber is not a normal thing.
They are quite secretive. In fact, their executives wouldn't even take any questions on the record about this.
Yeah, and I would say extremely secretive. Any interaction I've had with them is at a public event in terms of their employees talking about driverless cars, talking about their plans in Pittsburgh. And they're very vague. They love to talk on background a lot. In terms of do they have the technology, I don't know if anyone knows that except for the people who work inside Uber. But I would think that, I would also note that a lot of the times they don't have the technology, but they're developing it literally right now. Like, all of it is happening on the fly right now because there's this big race to be the first in terms of Google is involved, Apple is involved, other motor companies are also involved to create this first perfect driverless car.
One other note about this, the PUC has ruled that Uber can continue to do this as long as they do it for free. But once they want to charge, then they have to get a license issued by the PUC. And we know what happened last time, that they didn't get a license when they were offering their ride calling service, an $11 million fine.
Yeah, which has not, which they appealed and they said, nope, still an $11 million fine.
So they did not win that appeal.
Yeah.
We just have about a minute and a half left. I do want to bring up, what's the latest on the bike lanes, especially in the Oakland area? We had some comments. We had some hearings. We talked about the safety of bike lanes out in the CMU area, West Carson Street as well. I know this is a story that you've been following closely, right?
Yeah, I've been writing about bike news for a long time. I would say the latest is that the bike advocates have actually started a petition that they're going to hand into PennDOT in terms of asking for more safety measures that they have requested.
And a lot of those same advocates attended a meeting on CMU's campus about 2 weeks ago, and this was a meeting about installing safer bike lanes on Forbes Avenue, kind of through the campus area and down to Birmingham Bridge. And the bike advocates who attended that meeting voiced a lot of displeasure with how PennDOT has been approaching, you know, road improvements in the Pittsburgh area. They were really pressing for more measures to ensure that drivers are, you know, acting cautiously and proceeding slowly. They wanted better bike lanes, more defined bike lanes, and they really kind of pushed PennDOT on that. And PennDOT said they welcomed the feedback, but also said, there's a lot of other things that go into our decisions about these kinds of projects. And obviously, there's also a cost associated with it. The Forbes Avenue project is has an estimated price tag of $10 million. So none of this stuff is free. It's got to be paid for somehow.
Yeah, absolutely. But at the same time, a lot of the things that they're asking for in terms of really protected lanes and connectivity, PennDOT has not really addressed. And so I think that's why there was this meeting was very tense in terms of them wanting to see PennDOT actually address the safety of cyclists.
More meetings ahead or not?
Yes, PennDOT said that there will be another meeting, but they have not announced exactly when that is. This is not a normal thing for them to meet with cyclists all the time, so I think they're still getting their sea legs on that.
All right, gentlemen. Ryan Dito is a reporter with the Pittsburgh City Paper, and Mike Walton's a reporter for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
A new community-led plan released this week intends to better integrate immigrants in Allegheny County. We'll discuss that next on The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA.